Chapter 5. What options are left in a growth-constrained future? Moving forward, we need a miracle to accomplish significant economic growth, particularly if we want growth that isn't just showing in the numbers of top earners, but is felt by most people. This will be next to impossible, and so far, despite all those extraordinary efforts made, it hasn't worked, as most people are not benefiting from the little growth still achieved in some places. So by now, not only have we already experienced almost a decade of economic unpleasantries, but equally, no data we analyzed provides hope that growth will return to the way it used to be. We are fighting against growing extraction efforts for natural resources and energy, and an economy that has exhausted its potential to incur more debt. At the same time, we are also at the beginning of one of the biggest transitions in the past 250 years. Away from fossil fuels and back to renewable energy sources, mostly back to sunlight in all its variations. The biggest challenge, after such a long period where we experienced growth, is accepting that, most likely, no one in the future will ever be as rich as we were during the past decades, particularly in advanced economies. Part of accepting is to understand that, even after scaling back, we will still be among the richest humans of all times, and that living with less, as much as the thought might hurt, does not affect our well-being unless we pick a fight. The trouble is that fighting is the initial reaction most people have when they see their economic future being challenged. There is a big urge to find someone who is guilty. And as we see in many countries, the political discussion is already showing signs of increasing tension and blaming particular groups for our lack of progress. The biggest downside of this dynamic, by trying to find scapegoats and people to blame for what's going wrong, we lose our ability to think clearly about what can be done to change the situation. Once we have dug in and have found our enemies, our brain tends to ignore reality and no longer looks for real solutions that could make the situation better. This is something behavioral scientists call confirmation bias. By ignoring facts that don't fit our position, we make things worse. No matter if we aim at individuals, groups, or other countries, unresolved conflict has never improved the world. Many people share our assessment that the days of fossil energy are numbered, and some even actively want to end the use of coal, oil, and natural gas sooner because of their negative impacts on the environment. We don't take sides in this argument, but are confident that there is no way to phase out fossil energy and replace it with renewable sources without adjusting our economies. Downward, that is. Does this mean we shouldn't invest in and research renewable energy technologies? Absolutely not. We urgently need to find out how to power our societies in the best possible way without fossil fuels in the not-so-distant future once they become unaffordable. The only thing we must accept is that this greener, future world will not work the same way as it does today. For all we know so far, shrinking economies are the most likely scenario. For the lowest 20% of U.S. households, their 2014 income, when corrected for inflation, are back to mid-1970s levels. If inflation on core essentials like housing, energy, food, education, and health are considered, they probably are closer to the mid-1960s. Obviously, nobody should ask those households to scale back even further. But for others, who have grown accustomed to a lifestyle with a much larger footprint, with multiple cars, large houses with TVs in every room, international travel, and a new phone every year, there is change in store. There are three ways to respond. We can passively wait for reality to kick us back. You remember that rubber band. We can fight it and get into real trouble by making it snap, or we can accept this new reality and gradually change to a future that can be satisfactory for everyone. There is enough evidence from around the world that people from countries with far less disposable income than in the U.S. or in Europe are as happy or even happier than those in the richest of countries. What is essential for humans isn't so much to have all these bells and whistles we have grown accustomed to, but rather the ability to feel safe, to have all necessities like food, shelter, energy, healthcare, and education covered, and to have a purpose. As a rule of thumb, there is no correlation between income and happiness in economies where average incomes rise above $10,000. Therefore, backtracking on our growth path isn't necessarily bad. A return to the consumption levels of 1970 wouldn't hurt the well-being of the top 80% of U.S. households in the least. If done deliberately and with care, quite the contrary is true. Giving up the struggle for more material wealth each year can be a huge relief.